Coming up, it's all politics from NPR News.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Thank you all very much for coming out today.
And that, of course, was the voice of Senator Larry Craig, Republican of Idaho.
Who basically said he was not coming out.
And who has said he has never been coming out.
A very surreal week for the conservative three-term senator from Idaho, Republican senator from Idaho. There have been questions. There have been rumor and innuendo for 25 years about Larry Craig's sexuality, none of which we felt need to talk about on this podcast or on NPR because it's who cares? I mean, it's nobody's
business. Has been on the blogs, however. Last fall, after the Mark Foley scandal broke in the House and there was a lot of talk about how many gay people there might be in the Republican infrastructure within the House of Representatives and possibly the Senate, his name did come up.
Basically, let's just go back from the beginning for one second. On Monday of this week, Roll Call, the Capitol Hill newspaper, released the news that Senator Craig had been arrested in a Minneapolis restroom in June, stopping
off on his flight back to Idaho.
Lewd behavior, and he pleaded guilty in August, paid a fine, and is serving a year of probation.
Why was none of that reported at the time?
Well, very good question. Why did nobody know about it? But having said that,
well, somebody must have known about it. I mean, there was an arresting officer. There was a courtroom.
Right.
And there was an arrest.
And there were documents.
And that prompted, of course, a lot of the reaction. It wasn't just the notion that he had been involved or was at least allegedly involved with a plainclothes officer who was in this bathroom looking for people who were looking for this kind of activity. But it was the detail which made it highly graphic and which contributed, I think, to a highly undignified treatment of the story across the board in all media.
Oh, absolutely. If you watch CNN during the week, all they did was not only show pictures of Larry Craig, but they showed pictures of a Minneapolis men's room.
Right.
And over and
at
over
the
and over again.
In yes, at the airport, yes. Even if there were some chance that Larry Craig might have explained some of this, and of course the explanation he gave was that he pled guilty not feeling he was guilty.
He said he did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
That's correct. And he said that he had only pled guilty because he thought then the whole thing would go away,
right.
Would blow over, he'd pay a little fine.
Careful.
And he would then be able to keep it out of the newspaper, particularly one newspaper, the Idaho Statesman, which had been working on a story for the better part of a year, trying to detail all these allegations against him, or allegations about his sexuality that he denied.
And on Tuesday's front page of the Idaho Statesman, there was a comprehensive story by the Idaho Statesman detailing, again, the rumor, the innuendo, the reports, the alleged reports, dating back to 1982 when he was a freshman member of the House.
Let's just listen to a little bit of what's out there in talk radio.
I think that he did commit a crime. He pled guilty to a crime. But I think that, to me, this isn't the kind of crime that calls into question his fitness for office. I think that the voters should evaluate him at the next election.
The pressure continues on Senator Larry Craig out of Idaho. Republicans are now calling for him to step out of the Senate. We'll take your calls and have the latest news.
This is the senator we told you about yesterday from Idaho, Republican, conservative family values, Larry Craig. He's fought against every piece of gay rights legislation he's ever seen. Caught playing footsies with an undercover cop at an airport in Minnesota.
Here's another interesting point, and one that fascinates me. The Republican Senate leadership immediately came out.
No, wait. Go ahead. I'll let you finish because it's something that's very important about what they did.
And said that Larry Craig would not be returning to his committee assignments, including the Appropriations Committee assignment that is one of the keystones of his power back in Idaho and one of the most sought-after assignments that any senator can have.
And on Tuesday afternoon, even before Larry Craig went to the cameras and the microphones to hold his press conference, the Senate Republican leadership, Mitch McConnell, Trent Lott, Kay Bailey Hutchinson, John Kyle, and John Ensign.
Just to name a few.
Well, those are all of them. All signed a statement that the Senate Ethics Committee should do an investigation. This is even before the press conference itself. So what I took from this is that the collapse of the Republican Party in 2006, perhaps mostly on a lot to do with ethics problems and Mark Foley and the scandal and the Jack Abramoff scandal.
Or so these particular people believe.
Well, I think there's truth to that. I think there's truth that a lot
of... Some of them believe that was the only problem.
Well, but what I'm saying is I think a lot of conservative Republicans, a lot of evangelical Christians, a lot of people stayed home in 2006 because they feel that the Republican Party lost its moral compass. And people like Mark Foley hung around for far too long defending the Mark Foleys, the Bob Nays of the world.
Was it a loss of the moral compass or is it something else? And let me throw out another case. David Vitter, earlier this summer, in July, he admits he's taking part in or using a D.C. escort service. And then there are allegations in Louisiana, where he was a Republican senator, that he was also visiting houses of prostitution there in Louisiana.
That is disgusting to do that in New Orleans.
All right. What happened to him?
Well, see,
did he
lose
any committee assignments?
Let me tell you.
Was there an investigation started by the same Republican Senate leaders? They are the same leaders in the case of David
Vitter. Well, I've got a lot of emails, people saying, is it because that Larry Craig is gay and David Vitter is heterosexual? I would make the argument that also Larry Craig was arrested and pleaded guilty. And I think that's a big difference to what he did.
That is another difference. But is that the difference that drives the difference in the way he was treated? Is that the key difference in the minds of the Senate Republican leaders?
Well, one thing is what's different is that David Vitter is not up for re-election next year. Larry Craig is.
But they're not asking him not to run for re-election. They're asking him to resign. And they're taking away his committee assignments, which essentially leaves him powerless in the Senate.
They want him to disappear.
They want him to disappear. They want him to resign immediately. They've essentially left the pistol by the bedstand. They did not do that to David Vitter. Another human drama playing out having to do with the United States Senate this past week, utterly upstaged, of course, by the Larry Craig drama, was Tim Johnson returning to South Dakota for the first time since his brain hemorrhage at Christmas time, speaking to his constituents back home for the first time since then, and giving us the first indication of his degree of recovery from that hemorrhage and his political plans.
And I promise you all that I will work harder than ever for you and for our state. Not everyone gets a second chance at life. My commitment to you for my second chance at life is to make you and all South Dakotans the beneficiary of that gift.
Very moving stuff, especially, and very, you know, I think anybody who's a Democrat in this country, aside from the personal concern about Tim Johnson's health, knew that Tim Johnson's precarious health condition in December 2006 was very, very nerve-wracking, given the fact that Democrats had just taken control of the Senate.
By one vote.
By one vote. Of course, if Tim Johnson were to die or were incapacitated and resign, the Republican governor of South Dakota, Mike Rounds, would presumably name a Republican replacement. It would be a 50-50 Senate, and Dick Cheney would put the control of the Senate back into Republican hands. So every Democrat knows about Tim Johnson, what happened to him in December, and they were very concerned about him, clearly, for obvious reasons. Now, on a personal level, watching him at this event this week in Sioux Falls was really, really moving because, you know, you don't often get a second chance at life, and he got this second chance.
Yes, but now from a political standpoint, he has said he wants to run for re-election.
He intends to run.
To do whatever he can as a senator for the rest of this term, running through next year, and then run for re-election again next year, possibly against Mike Rounds, the governor that you mentioned, or some other strong Republican. And does he have, at this point, the capacity to serve in the Senate, or need he concentrate on his health? How can he ask the South Dakotan voter to give him another term at this point?
Well, that's the question that everybody has to ask, and that's the question that the Republican Party needs to do, and the Democrats as well. You know,
they have a potential candidate in Stephanie Herseth, their statewide elected Congress member.
They do, although Tim Johnson, again, has raised a lot of money. A lot of people have raised a lot of money on his behalf, especially since December 13th when he fell ill. Again, he said this week that he intends to run. But the question of South Dakota voters obviously have to answer is when they look at something like that, and here's a question that Tim Johnson needs to answer, does he want to go through a grueling campaign, which will be a grueling campaign? Remember, in 2002, he won by 524 votes his reelection over John Thune, now the senator, now the other senator of South Dakota. And also, is he capable of serving another 6 years?
So now we have a Republican senator from Idaho. We don't know if he's coming back. That's Larry Craig. We have Tim Johnson, a Democratic senator from South Dakota. We don't know if he's going to be able to actually come back and serve much on the floor of the Senate in the weeks to come. And all this at a time when the House and Senate are coming back to work after Labor Day. They've got to deal with the Iraq War. They're going to have the Petraeus report. The president is going to ask for another large supplemental appropriation for Iraq. It's costing something like $3 billion a week. We are also going to have a proposed replacement for Alberto Gonzalez, who also resigned this week, another story that's been covered over in
Doesn't
a
lot. Doesn't
that
seem like a long time
it
ago?
It does. It seems like weeks ago. He's already been gone. Karl Rove is serving his last day at the White House this week. A lot of people are leaving. Congress is coming back into a situation that seems almost like a power vacuum.
And not only that, we talked about people who are leaving, we know are leaving, the Karl Rove and Alberto Gonzalez, perhaps, likely, Larry Craig. But what about something like John Warner, the 80-year-old senator from Virginia, who it looks like this month of September, it looks like he's going to announce also that he is not seeking another term, a very respected voice on foreign policy for the Republicans.
Stepping back after having called for the United States to start drawing down its troop force in Iraq by Christmas time, actually departing from the president's line on this, even in advance of the Petraeus report, and as we're starting to receive various and sundry status reports from Iraq, and that issue heats up.
There was an article in the paper, I don't know if it was just the New York Times this week, but I thought it was interesting that the president and the Republicans, the White House, feel that they are on the ascendancy on this war, that they are on the offensive, that the poll numbers, which is probably true, that the poll numbers that look pretty bleak for them in June look more promising going into September. Yet, do we really feel that the American people are willing to give the administration a second look on this war or second? I mean, I would argue no, and especially I'd be very surprised if Republicans, given the drubbing they took in 2006, whether they'd be willing to go along for another round of funding and votes.
Or whether they would be looking for some kind of earlier out, a three-month window, a six-month window, something of that nature, but not the full year that the White House is clearly looking for. A dramatic September developing, into the midst of which some kind of a replacement for Alberto Gonzalez will be dropped as a nominee. Might not be that controversial. On the other hand, maybe enough to blow the Senate up on its own.
That's a very good question. That's the two ways that Bush can deal with it. He could be conciliatory, almost like what Ronald Reagan was at the end of his term when he picked Howard Baker and there was more nice talk across the aisle, and pick somebody who more of either a caretaker or somebody who wouldn't ruffle feathers.
I think he should choose Russell Feathers. Yeah. I think Russell Feathers is clearly
I have reservations about him. I have reservations
about
him.
The man for the job.
But,
or Orrin Hatch, if not Russell Feathers.
Right. Or he can just do an in-your-face nomination. So, look,
I see. I think that would be exactly what he would want to do.
Yeah.
But we'll soon know. And if we can't, there'll be chaos. Chaos? Did somebody mention the 2008 nominating calendar in the states for the primaries and the caucuses? Ken, what's the number one state event announced so far for 2008? What's the first one on the calendar now?
Well, now it looks like it's to be the all-important and historically important Wyoming caucuses.
That's right. The Wyoming County Conventions, which have moved up to January 5th. I'm excited about Wyoming.
I am.
Think a lot of the candidates will be beating a trail to Cheyenne and Cody.
And what about that friendly ghost?
Absolutely. I have no doubt but that even Cheyenne will put in an appearance.
What about that friendly ghost?
I think that we can also count on a lot of this going right down Jackson Hole. So, if Wyoming is first, what about Iowa? What happens with Iowa? Iowa still be first?
Well, that's the thing. First of all, we also have the Spectre. You mentioned Chaos.
All Inspectors.
No, mm-hmm. Chaos Inspector. Those two groups. Florida insisting on a January 29th primary, which is unacceptable to the DNC.
And the DNC has already told them, no delegates.
They have 30 days
no
to
delegates.
Change it.
Oh,
right. And Corinne Brown was on Talk of the Nation this week.
She was a hoot.
She was screaming.
Yeah, she was a little upset.
Blaming everything on the Republican legislature.
Blaming everything on you because you were on doing political junkie.
As I should be. But also Michigan is also talking about having its primary or caucus, we don't know when or what, but on January 15th.
That's correct.
And if that happens, then Iowa and New Hampshire, which is currently scheduled for January 22nd, would have to move before January 15th.
I think it will already move before January 15th because it wants to get further in front of South Carolina, another leapfrogger.
Which is now January 19th for the Republicans.
You're all getting this down. Listener, we want to make sure the listener is getting this all down because it's all going to change. There's really no necessity to
actually
write it
we
down.
Don't even have to talk about January 22nd. We have to talk about 2008 or 2007, which
That's
is what
right.
it comes down to.
That's right. We're going to probably be seeing some kind of event held in 2007, and then the question becomes, do people really pay attention to it? Do the candidates all flock to that state? If it's Wyoming, clearly not. If it's Florida, maybe they do.
Do you think what about the friendly ghost?
Yes, I think the specter of the friendly ghost is what we're afraid of.
Yeah.
And I believe that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
Some can follow it. I'm Ron Elving.
And I was Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
The American people already know that Bill Clinton is a bad boy, a naughty boy. I'm going to speak out for the citizens of my state who, in the majority, think that Bill Clinton is probably even a nasty, bad, naughty boy.